本节目。
The number of 小鬼 child spirits, dead girl ghosts, and even animal spirits around him is astounding.
There is no free lunch. If you're going to get a windfall, there will be a payment. Quirky behavior of all was that Ching had to ejaculate into a plastic bag and never on her or in her.
Each of us were given a stick with inscriptions on it that we were supposed to stick into the grave.
Is anyone here?
What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
Supernatural Confessions is a safe space for anyone who have had a paranormal encounter and want to be able to tell their story to a community who will not ridicule them. Some of us have experienced the unexplainable ourselves, while the rest of us simply enjoy listening to ghost stories. If you or someone you know have had an encounter to share, get in touch with us through our website, supernaturalconfessions.com. If you have just discovered Supernatural Confessions, hello there and welcome. For fans of our show, welcome back. It's great to have you with us again. In the spirit of Lunar New Year and good fortune, today's theme is all about using magic to boost one's luck and how far some people would go beyond just the customary superstitious beliefs into ensuring that they do indeed get rich or die trying. Listen to this podcast titled Fortune Favors, hosted by Eugene Tay and Jonathan Lim, only on Supernatural Confessions. Enjoy. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Friday Night Live. This is our second episode of 2024. Today, I am flying kind of solo because my buddy, partner in crime, the immortal Jonathan Lim, is right now at Fort Canning. It is opening night for Battle Box, and it's something that I have watched and I found it to be really, really interesting. So that's something that I would definitely encourage you guys to do as well. Because if you know Jonathan and I, one thing that we always do is we perfect the stuff that we produce. Very perfectionist. So you can imagine you're going to get your money's worth at this event. But more on that later on. Right now, welcome to today's episode, Fortune Favors. What is this about? It is about money. Money, God of money, money spells, money everything, because we are still at the last leg of Chinese New Year. So, you know, we Chinese lah, we love our money. And of course, not forgetting some very, very important people, and I can never have done this without them. Let us thank our Patreons. So our Patreons, where are they? Oh, there we go. If you want to join us as patrons, the link is patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions, and thank our sentient entities. Every month, they put in money, hard-earned money aside, just so that I can continue churning out the stuff that you guys love, and I'm so grateful for them. It's Elaine Chua, Tunku Elsation, Emco Grimm, ZP Matt, Queen Lai, Lim Tech Chuan, Elwin Sensei, VL, Casey Chan, Alexi O, Janice Ang, Jacqueline N, Yong Kwan Yu, Han Jae, Jerwin, Dato Easy, Dato La Tunku La, Starving Jack, and also with Wandering Spirit, we have Joel Goh, Deborah Confield, Chia King Toh, Linda Hayden, LEX, Jess Neo, Jerry Fish, Bibit Teo, Tay Hak Wee, Two Sands, Alvin Lim, Kenny Polaris, Jayanti, Saritzu, TTB, Jujume, ZP, Davin Days, Gary Fu, Isaac Lam, Martin, Felony, Fel Annie, Felony, Don Sie, in Restless Souls, we have Si Chia Toh, Grace Chai, Kenny Chia, Ron K, Jack Ong, Nicholas Poa, Burke, Serene Tan, Rachel Y, Kelvin C, Lechumi, Julian Teo, David Gln... I always have some problem pronouncing his name. David Gelnivix. Thank you, patrons, for making this possible. And for the rest of you watching in and you want to help out with the show, please like and share. That works out fine. Your presence here joining me Friday is itself a gift to me. But if you want to do something more, there is a dollar sign icon near the comment section. You can just click on that, drop in any amount of money you like, and what I will receive is a big box which you can type in anything you want, any questions, any comments, or if you just want to cheer us on and just drop some money there, everything will be appreciated and it goes a long, long way. Alrighty, let's start with the show. Today's show is about money, and Asia is full of beliefs and superstitions when it comes to money. Let me know in the comment section, what are some of the superstitions that you subscribe to with regards to fortune and money? I'm going to list a few that I have seen. Let me know in the comment section once again if this is something that you have seen, forgotten, and I'm just bringing it back to mind. Top of the list, of course, we have the Tai Sen Mao, the cat that waves to you, and you'll find that at most shops, retail shops, Chinese owners, you'll find the cat. What that cat is supposed to do is to wave money in. The other thing that you might find as well, especially at shops, retail shops, would be a frog, a three-legged frog, two in front, one where the tail is supposed to be, but it's a bent tail, it's a leg. I'll try to find all these pictures later on and put it up there so you can see. Or maybe I just post it up on Facebook group, Supernatural Confessions Facebook group, for you guys to share that. So that frog is also supposed to be sitting on a lot of money. So if you put that in your house, that frog, whatever it's called, it helps the family retain money. Now, the other thing that I see a lot of retailers do, especially the older folks, is they put the $1 coin. Because our Singapore $1 coin is shaped like a pakwa. In the older times, you would find actually the coin with the hole in the center, the China coin, right? And you put that on your cash register. That is supposed to attract money to you. Of course, we have your Tai Sen Ye. And it's hard to miss the Tai Sen Ye because almost every neighborhood in the center of the neighborhood, city center or town center, you have this guy standing up there looking like the mayor of the town. He's a Tai Sen Ye. What's a Tai Sen Ye? He's the god of fortune. And you pray to him, or the Chinese people would pray to him during Chinese New Year or just any time of the year to ask for money. Money luck. And we have a lot of hopes and dreams. Now, how many of this is actually effective? Well, let me know if it works for you. I have a huat kui up there. That one came from China, my Chinese New Year trip to Tai Sen Ye. And I brought this kui back. It's supposed to give me good luck. So I'll let you know at the end of the year if that really works out. Juju, thank you very much. So maybe my hot kui does work after all, because Juju may just drop me $69.98. Hoada. Thank you very much. But now let us go on to our very first confession tonight. And this one is narrated by Jonathan. Let's have a listen.
People come to me for a few common reasons, mostly for love or for 4D luck. There are a few cases that I've encountered that have got to do with black magic, but those aren't many. After a prior incident involving a curse cleansing ritual that claimed the life of one of my assistants, I stopped taking on such cases. These days, I just do blessings and empowerment only. You were asking for stories of people overdoing fortune and luck? I got one. Park Jin, or PJ as we call him, was in his late 40s, early 50s. He followed a common friend to my temple once, and I think maybe he liked the feel of the place. So he came back on his own a few more times for blessings. Each time, he would pack a generous ang pao for donation. One day, we started talking, and he opened up about himself. PJ was a full-time gambler and a casino junkie. He's been doing this for 2 decades already. And he candidly said that if he has to go back to a normal job, he doesn't know what he will work as. He didn't study or get a good education when he was young. So work options are very limited. When he was younger, he worked as a pimp runner. And through the industry, he learned about the various magic employed by the different girls and pimps. Magic was very common. Money was the name of the game. Money is power. First, it started with amulets, then tattoos. Then more hardcore stuff that involved inserting things into his body or requiring him to spend nights at the cemetery. At this point, few things about what I felt about PJ when he first walked in. There's a certain aura about him, a shiftiness, a strong pull energy. Contrary to popular belief, not all spiritual practitioners walk around with our third eye radar on all the time. It's very tiring to read people. And also, we don't do it out of ethical reasons. But for PJ, I was really curious. Then I asked him, "What are you really coming here for?" Then he paused for a moment as if I caught him in a lie. He said he was thinking about removing all this. But so far, he has gone to a few places, but the masters don't want to do it for him. I asked him for permission to let me take a look. He nodded. The minute I opened my third eye, I almost fell off the chair. The number of Xiao Gui, child spirits, dead girl ghosts, and even animal spirits around him is astounding. I couldn't find any shred of his soul left. He was like a zombie. It's like an overcrowded home for these entities who were feeding on him. I asked him, "Do you know what you have invited into your body?" He said he knew. "Then why still do it? Or why didn't you stop after a few?" He said he just wanted to feel safe. He felt like the more, the merrier. After all, nothing bad happened to anyone. In fact, he made it a point to make a lot of donations to earn merits. I asked, "Didn't anyone tell him the repercussions? Some of these are done by high-level masters. Surely they would have given you a warning." He said they did, but he didn't really read the fine print. I asked him about his family. He looked crestfallen. He said he was widowed twice, no children, no family. We let the silence linger between us. I didn't know what to say, and he probably felt he had said too much. I told him, quite straightforward, "If I remove all these barangs in you, I think you will die. It's above my pay grade." But he looked at me, almost pleading, and said, "Money is not an issue. How much you need?" I told him, "Friend, this one is not something money can buy back on." He looked crestfallen again. We changed topic to bring up the mood, and then he made an excuse to leave. I saw less and less of him after that exchange. But many years later, I bumped into him at Queensway Shopping Centre. He was looking radiant and fresh. We exchanged pleasantries for a while, and then I asked him how he was. He said that he had turned to a particular religion and found salvation. It made me happy to see him saved. This one managed to escape. But how many others will be so fortunate? Jang, jang, jang. Wow, powers, yeah. Okay, I'm really surprised he escaped. This sounded like a story that was going to spiral until, you know, he's a desiccated corpse found somewhere in the basement.
Most of them have.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, from everything we know about these deals and the cost, there's no easy escaping. Mm-hmm. So I must say this is a very surprisingly happy ending. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking what the religion was, but well done.
Not hard to infer some of the words there.
No promo here. No promo here. Okay, but I mean, okay. How long had he spent collecting these things, right? That's what I want to know. You know, how long does it take to become so completely vacuum packed with clinging spirits, you know? And what did that do to him along the way? You know, how do you walk around with so many spirits and not feel it, right? Mm. Based on what we know, you know, one girl sit on your shoulder already, like, cannot stand up straight. How did this guy manage to walk around with all of these things? Is his life force that strong?
Not many people who are actually afflicted or have attachment actually can feel it. Like most people, even if they're not think, I mean, not everyone thinks about the supernatural all the time. and they may go to places, they may carry things, they have attachment, not possession, yeah, just the attachment, and they would be none the wiser. And if they don't even believe in the supernatural, probably their entire life they don't even feel anything,
right?
Or the random backache would not even raise any alarms for them.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Interesting to consider that some people can be extremely haunted and not know that they are haunted, you know. But does that mean that then, on one hand, it's because they are a little bit numb, right? Or they are a little bit blur. On the other hand, does it also mean that these entities cannot really be that strong? Because if they are really strong, it will go through, right? The blurrest person will still sort of feel something.
So I think this one, what he went through was he's like a halfway house collecting all these spirits. And from the description, I'm making an educated guess that some of them are Thai. Some of them are probably Indonesian, very nature spirit. So if it's just the Kui Kian and all that, you can probably feel them around. But if you're dealing with Kui Kian, then you will know what to offer them, right? There are rituals that you need to abide by. So I'm sure he knows. But I think... part of his...
Oh, something is attached to you.
Part of PJ's psyche is, I'm not hurting anyone. I'm not doing anything bad. So that whole conscience is, you know, I'm doing good. So whatever I'm feeling, he probably, or whatever he's feeling is probably not something bad.
Actually, his psychology, as you mentioned, is quite interesting because he's a gambler, right? He's a gambler. He's a junkie, casino junkie. But he seems to be a very well-adjusted dude, you know, who takes the trouble to do the merits and all that, right? So, is he an example of a model, sort of a model dabbler in spiritual thing, you know, that he own self-balance?
No, I don't think it's own self-balance because he is from the industry. And merits, getting merits and all that, these are your basic tenets of Thai Buddhism or even Buddhism. So, if they're going to be dabbling in this and he is a believer... then some of these things are really the must-do one, or you really cannot...
No choice, lah.
Yeah.
So you're saying he's not really a good guy. He just knows what he should do, lah. He knows which side his bread is buttered on, lah.
From just hearing you say, to tell the confession, I think it's just a guy who gone a bit too far. Now, I'll draw an analogy. It's like, you know, you do plastic surgery, maybe a little Botox here, a little Botox there. That's fine, right? You know, a little lift in the lips. But he probably like, you know, put fillers here, fillers here, fillers there. Then by the time he looks 55, he looks like Madonna. Like, everything's all just weird. So I think he just overdid it.
Right. But what was it in the story? I'm skimming back through the story, right? What was it that made him want to get rid of it? I think he didn't manage to share that part with
didn't
the confessor.
Didn't say. But
yeah, he didn't say, right? He's not like... Yeah, what do you think?
Because... there's a part where they talk about his family, talk about his life, then he got sad. So I think it comes to a point where you got all the money in the world, but you don't have someone to share it with. You don't have people. So it's a very lonely life for him. And I think the entire industry he grew up in with all the prostitutes, the PM, that's a very siloed life. You don't have anyone you can trust. So maybe it's come to a point where he like, eh, 不要了, but because he has already injected all these buried things inside himself, it's not something you can just stop overnight. So he did look for solutions, ask certain masters. Then everyone's like, oh, I cannot do, above my pay grade. Like even this guy, my friend who had the conversation and confessed his story, is like, oh, I don't touch this.
I mean, looking at the whole story as an overview, right, it seems like he seems to be all right with what these spirits do to him or do not do to him personally. He's only sad because he got no friend. He got no family. Right? So to me, he's like, this is the kind of ad for like, you know, Ministry of Family. You know, ministry, right? You know, and it's really about like the tagline should be like, spirits are not your real family. You know? Yeah. You know, and want you to settle down properly, you know? So, but I think that is true though, because if these things are such a major part of your life, then it's very hard for other people to form attachment to you when there were too many other people already attached to you. You freak them out, first of all. And maybe some of the spirits perhaps can be jealous, right? And affect the people, right? Whether obviously and deliberately, or whether it's just, you know, being around you drains them or something else, right? So, sooner or later, people run away, right?
Separate story, right? People who dabbles in black art sometimes, they cannot find life partner because the entity just doesn't want them to share. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I think the jealousy thing is very real, lah. It's very real, right? I mean, what's an attachment without a bit of jealousy, right? You know, nobody is generous, lah. You know, but okay, the reason I'm inclined to think that these assorted things that are inside him are not that powerful is because they are willing to share. They are all willing to. You know, usually you hear about fighting, you know, spirits that are fighting over. Remember we heard about the Susuk, the lady with six spirits inside her, and they are all fighting, right? And they want to be like the last one standing, you know. But here, hey, all this happy community of animals.
Overcrowded in one vessel, all eating just a little bit of his what's left of his soul.
Correct, you know. And maybe it's because they are animals and little kids and, you know, small girl spirits. You know, if there was one bitter old lady in there, she would chase all away. Right? We've heard of those kind, the scary nene spirits. You know, but yeah, maybe they're all kind of like junior spirits. So he managed to, you know. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is a story about the cost. But fortunately for this guy, it's a cost that he saw coming. He saw coming and he definitely managed to find salvation. So happy for him.
Yeah, I like the ending.
You know?
Happy ending.
Yeah, I like the ending. I like the ending. I mean, I wish I could find out more about exactly what he had, you know, and where, like you're saying, right, which ones were Thai, which ones were, you know, were Indonesian, and which ones are the ones that are popular among pimps and prostitutes. I think that's an episode we need to do. The PMP stories, you know, what kind of magic would pimps and prostitutes need?
Actually, I have heard of this and I have spoken to some of them in my time with the Peace Center. We can talk about that, but I think it's more powerful if I can get actually one of them to come on the show and confess. Or even guest host. Wow, that'd be ideal.
Yeah. That the Geylang episode. Geylang episode. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, right? Talking about a Peace Center and all these these people who provide these services, right? Not the prostitute, I mean the spiritual services.
Oh, okay.
I was at Golden Mile Tower just recently. And so many shops. Did you know that? Golden Mile, not Golden Mile Complex, we know last time had a lot. Golden Mile Tower has more. Literally, the whole third floor, every single shop is an amulet shop. I didn't know that. So, worth a visit. Maybe all the ones from Golden Mile Complex move next door.
No, I just what I'm thinking as well.
Quite possibly. So, I'm thinking that floor is a very keras floor. And all the spirits are fighting.
Well, but if they're in the amulet, they are safe. Like, they're like, you know, in their little prison. Block back.
But yes, anyone go and check out Golden Mile Tower, right, and see. Because and maybe we should interview some of the people from there.
Well, thank you very much, John. And also thank you, Frankie. Thank you, Kenny. Thank you, Sai. It's me for all your blessings and donation. Thank you so much. Keep it coming, guys. It's very, very encouraging to see all that window pop up. Thank you so much. Juju may ask if I'm looking for guest hosts. I am. I'm always happy to have you guys come on the show and be guests. You know, if you enjoy it or if you have something to contribute, I'm always happy to have this exchange of ideas. And it's so nice to see the community stepping up. Like what John says, it'd be quite cool if any of you out there who are silent listeners and you are a pimp or a prostitute, or not a prostitute, that sounds so rude. If you are a lady of the night, we would love to hear from you. What are some of this magic that you employ to bring in customers? I know you guys are doing something. Come on the show, let me know, or contact me for an anonymous confession. Serene Tan, thank you as well for your blessings. So sweet, so darling of all of you. So what do you think about this particular confession? I made a poll and I asked, how many of you, if you are guaranteed, a windfall, would go through with a money ritual? Bearing in mind that a lot of times when we talk about things, and rightfully Anna Vong pointed it out as well, that there is no free lunch. If you're going to get a windfall, there will be a payment somewhere, somehow. You may not know, or you may make a promise, only to realize that promise is a lot larger than what you thought. Would you still do it? Well, according to the poll, I'm about to close now. 67% says no, which means 23% of you says yes. That's almost a quarter. No, 35%. That's more than a quarter. Let me know in the comment section, why are you willing to take the prize? If anything at all, why are you scared of it or why are you not scared of it? I want to know. Let's get this discussion going, okay? Also, somebody else mentioned, I think this guy is a new name to me. I can't quite pronounce it. Yalatop. Layatotep. It's an Egyptian name. Yalatotep. Apparently, this is just anecdotal evidence, right? People who are dabbling in money ritual and invites entity into their body, most of them, or at least the ones that I've seen, are actually fat. Bloated is the word, not fat, bloated. And the reason why they're bloated apparently is because there are spirits in them. Not sure how true that is. But could it be also because they are so rich and wealthy, they start eating a lot and then that's why they become bloaty? Could that be? Or is it the entity in them? My thought of PJ, and because I know this Ajahn, and I don't know PJ, but I know this Ajahn and he was one who shared this story with me. According to him, this guy, when he was looking at his aura, was a gone case. Think of PJ as a man who is entirely on life support. And all these spirits are there as life support. And removing any of it is just going to crash his system. Or if you think about it, using another analogy, the one I mentioned just now to John, is someone who has gone through so much facial reconstruction, Botox, injecting of liquid, cutting here, cutting there, adjusting the nose and everything, that removing one part of that surgery is just going to collapse the entire face. That was how PJ was like. But fortunately, at the end of the whole story, when Ajahn bumped into PJ again, many, many months, maybe even years later, PJ has found a religion or faith. And I think without even having to pronounce the faith, you guys can probably already know which faith we are talking about with regards to his salvation. So kudos to him, and that is, to me, a very warm feeling especially when I see cross-religion working together or helping things out for the greater good. That's one happy ending for PJ. We have two more confessions tonight. Now let us go to our second confession for tonight. What is yours is mine. I gotta tell you guys, the title of this confession tickles me because women often joke that her money is hers to spend, and the husband money is also hers. Someone took this expression one step too far, and as this is an ongoing case, the details, names of the person involved have all been changed to protect their identity. But none of these amendments affect the integrity of the story. And now, on to the confession. Mr. Cheng was not particularly a handsome man. But what he lacked in looks, he made up for it in financial stability. He isn't new to the dating game, but he has grown quite disillusioned with women because none of his relationships lasted very long. They were either too needy, too gold-digging, or that their personalities were at odds. To be fair, Mr. Cheng himself was an awkward individual. When he eventually met a more mature but attractive woman who was twice divorced, no children, and financially independent, he felt that this was probably the one for him. The story she had given him was that men only wanted her for sex or her money, and she had many short-term boyfriends who came and went. Her first husband took his own life. The second spiraled into depression after the divorce. While this should have been red flags for Cheng, he didn't feel that he should be probing about her past relationships. Not at least this early during the courtship anyway. She introduced herself as Amy, who was in her early 40s. By their third date, Amy suggested Cheng should move into her place and put his place out for rental. This sounded like a sound move, and he welcomed a relationship that seemed to be able to hold its own without draining his finances. Everything was fine and dandy at the beginning, but Ching realized belatedly that Amy had been increasingly controlling of their relationship. She had some weird, quirky practices, but he went along with it because, well, love. For example, Amy insisted on making soup for Ching every Thursday, and she would sit with him to ensure he finished every last drop. It's for his health, she would tell him. At first, it felt rather loving. But there were times he would come home and said he was too full to drink a soup. But she would start a scene like Ching did the worst thing possible. He gave in, of course, drank up the soup just to avoid a scene. She would shave him and cut his nails once a month. Grooming is important, and it sounded totally logical as well. He also had to sleep on the right side of the bed and never on her side. There were utensils at home that were divided too, that should never mix. In that 1 year, Ching found it strange that he had not met any of her family members or friends. And Ching was also not allowed to speak with neighbors because, according to Amy, everyone was jealous of them. Perhaps the most quirky behavior of all was that Ching had to ejaculate into a plastic bag and never on her or in her. You heard that right. He had to ejaculate into a plastic bag and she would keep it. Amy would also say that Ching is lucky to have her because the lines on her palms indicate that her partner will have lots of windfall luck. Amy also warned Ching that if he ever left her, he would be financially ruined. Ching didn't believe in such things and he didn't, take to heart Amy's threats. He didn't hear anything. He didn't say anything to avoid offending Amy. Slightly past the 1 year mark, Ching wanted his freedom back. Life with Amy was great at the beginning. Sex was consistently mind-blowing, barring the come-in-plastic-bag move, but he felt suffocated now. When he brought up the issue about moving out so that they have space for each other, she broke down and accused him of being ungrateful. She played the victim card very well, and Ching ended up enduring her shenanigans another year. In Ching's own words, the second was worse than the first. Ching picked up smoking at this time. He didn't want to smoke at home, so he would usually smoke a stick or two at a street corner before walking back home. On one of those evenings, he saw a neighbor struggle with moving an old sofa out and he went over to help. They got to talking and the elderly neighbor invited Ching in for a drink. He was hesitant at first because he didn't want to start an argument with Amy over defying one of her rules. But by this time, he was already feeling very frustrated. And he felt one drink wouldn't hurt. One drink went on to the second and the third. And by the time Ching left the neighbor's place, an hour later, he was both disgusted and scared. He learned from the neighbor that Amy could not possibly be in her 40s and that there were previous occasions her ex-boyfriends and one ex-husband would come back and yell accusations at her outside the gate that she had ruined them, each calling her by a different name. At first, the neighbors thought the guys were just calling out to a different girl each time and that the house had been sublet out to various people. But eventually, they all realized it was the same person that Ching knew as Amy. That night, Ching made the mistake of confronting her. She went ballistic. Initially, she told him to get out, and then she begged him to stay. Then she changed her mind again. During some parts of the argument, Ching thought he caught a glimpse of her real image. She was old and ugly. Witch-like, according to him. By morning, they seemed to have made up and fell asleep together. After Amy was fast asleep, Ching quickly grabbed his valuables and left the house. He didn't have time to pack anything. He would have to come back later, or so he thought. Amy left him a few hundred messages that day, many involving threats about destroying him, but Ching ignored all of them. He was not usually such a guy, but there's just something about Amy that triggered him so badly, and he didn't want to have anything to do with her. Ching started experiencing bad luck soon after. According to Ching, wow, the series of Suiya is supernatural level. A master who I recommended to Ching was able to confirm, without knowing Ching's background, that someone had bound his lifeline and whatever good fortune that was destined for Ching to another source, presumably to Amy. When asked if this can be solved, the master said it will take time. The level of dominance that Amy has over Ching was almost in its entirety, and that perhaps Ching's own good karma and merit helped him buy enough to get out and seek help. Just that amount of time. And because of certain complications, this incident dragged on for another month before the ritual could be conducted. The case is still ongoing. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Confessions podcast. If you are enjoying the show and would like to support our efforts, you can help by giving us a 5-star review or by becoming a patron by signing up for a monthly membership fee that starts from as low as $5. Check out the perks at patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. That's patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. Or if you feel like showing a simple gesture of appreciation, you can buy us a cup of coffee or two at buymeacoffee.com/superconfess. And now, let's get back to the show.
Wow, this one's serious. This one is serious. This is the kind of material that makes a very good suspense thriller. Because that woman is creepy as hell, and slowly building up, like, what is she doing? Why does he plot back? What's going on? You know, and then you hear from the neighbor, right? Then the neighbor tell you, then the next day you must find the neighbor hanging out there, you know, because this is really scary material.
Wow. I'm still stuck at coming inside plastic bag.
That one I think must be experienced to be understood, so everyone please. All right, anyone out there who has tried it, your feedback is welcome, but no need photos, huh? Okay. I'm very curious. So the whole point of her power is that if you're with her, it's okay, right? If you're with her, it's okay, because she's feeding. So if you try to leave her, that's where, you know. So what can she do? How bad can it get? Because he doesn't give a lot of details. Do you know the background? Yeah.
So when
happens to him?
When he said he was spiritually swayed, he was talking about how he lost his job, cannot get any more job, lost his friends, got into accident, fall down, lose things, handphone break, insurance lapse, like anything that could go wrong just went wrong. And so, of course, I asked, I said, could it be, you know, politely asking, coincidence that all these bad things happen, because you are emotionally in a very down spot, right? It's very easy to point finger at everything being that girl's fault. He says, I know all my life I've been very meticulous. I've been, you know, following orders, not following orders, following the law, not doing anything wrong, never even cross a jaywalk. You know, this that kind of guy, la, right?
Right, okay.
And now, despite doing everything right, everything becomes wrong. And then he says, what's really strange is that sometimes I see as if, like, you know, the traffic light is green and I drive, but actually it's red.
Okay. Yeah. So something is fooling with him, lah.
Really, it's like I can walk, then I really felt a wind will blow and I will tumble.
Fall down.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like he come out of the shower then accidentally fall and hit his face, and then scratch his lip, like don't know who, like that.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, like that, right? Okay. Then you know you're in trouble. Yeah. Okay.
So this thing about him and the lady, when I've heard this confession, first thing I went is, this woman must have suffered really badly from some psychological trauma. Right. And that she's now using magic to entice the man. Now, don't forget, when the man's with her, she says, you'll be blessed. She's only taking all... I'm assuming, right? That, you know, all this... ejaculating the plastic bag, sitting in the right bed, not using the utensils. These are all part of the magic ritual that she's already casting on her partner. And
right, yeah.
If you, it's almost like an insurance. If you don't do anything to me, you don't leave, you're fine. But the day you leave, I will make sure you die, chalat, chalat.
Okay, I want to clarify one thing. So I'm torn between two interpretations of her power, right? So one version is, as long as you stay with her, you are fine, you are blessed, right? And all she gets from that is she gets the loyalty that she wants, okay? Right? And what she's doing with all this collecting of nails and all that is just in case you try to.
Yes.
Okay? Right? Version two. Okay. Back to version one. But when you leave, that's when she will start draining your luck.
Correct.
And that's the punishment.
Not kill you, not hurt you, but just draining your luck.
Correct. So that's version one. Version two is a little bit different. It is that while you're with her, you think you are blessed, you think everything's okay, but she's already draining you.
Yes.
So that by the time, if you one day decide to leave her, you will realize you have no luck.
I'm going with version two.
There's no good version. The good version is just her hiding the fact that she's bleeding you dry of luck. Which means sooner or later, if he didn't talk to the neighbor and get freaked out, something will happen to him. You know,
in fact, it might be worse when she's done with him. He couldn't even, by then, he'd be so unlucky, all drained, all totally beholden to her, he can't even leave.
But then she wouldn't want you either, because she will have to feed on someone new. Correct? Sooner or later. Because remember, now we have all these exes who came and cursed at her outside her door, right? So how long can an average dude last, right? So this guy must have been pretty full of luck that he lasted 2 years, right? And also, you know, kept filling Ziploc bags. But, you know,
you're right, no, John, because I saw her as this suffering victim type who just wants a man to be by her side and using magic as a form of leverage. But now that I think about that, and you're right by pointing out I forgot about the ex, her boyfriends and her husbands and all that. Is I drain you like a tetra pack, I crush it.
And then I throw away, right? You know, and the punishment is not after. The punishment is she doesn't want you and she leaves you with nothing and you carry on your life. So the bad luck that he experienced when he tried to leave her is not because she cursed him with bad luck. It's because that's how much or how little luck you have left. Right? And and you can't get it back because she's already gobbled it all up. You know? Right? So she's a luck vampire. Yeah.
Yo.
Right? Yeah. And that's fascinating. You know? So he's lucky. Well, he's lucky currently that he's aware of it and he's trying to get, you know, I hope he gets out because God knows what the limit is for an average dude. Right? You know, before he's completely unsavable. I wonder if now, I don't know how to answer this question, but does luck replenish itself over time?
You know? So think of the luck as a tributary, a river that now someone has put a dam and it's redirected out.
Yeah.
So if you remove this dam, it will then come back.
So he has to remove her. Jang. He has to take the fight to her now.
But now she holds everything, you know. You got to go to HQ to fight her. And then on what grounds? Wow. Then let's say you go there, you like some of the other boyfriends shouting and screaming her name. It becomes a police case against you. Police come, she start to cry like, oh my God, Mr. Officer, he does this. And like you tell the officer what? She cast magic on me, yeah. That's not going to stand up in court of law. So
that's true.
She has an advantage over him and all of the other guys.
I'm curious to know, and maybe this is a question someone out there might be able to answer, right? What do you do if you find yourself depleted of luck, right? You know, what are the natural restorations? You know, what are the rituals you can do? Not go and make another deal and then, you know, get yourself trapped in some other situation. But is there a natural way to sort of slowly, you know, just like the way you replenish vitamin, replenish the iron in your system, can you slowly over time Well, normalize your luck?
Good question, John. There's one option that, as I said, this case is ongoing. One of the potential solution to this guy's, to Cheng's problem. We've not tried it yet, but perhaps after I tried it, I can let you know. But in theory, it is to give Cheng a mortal death. A spiritual death, rather. So, for all intent and purpose, we cut off the spiritual line, this whatever destiny, merit from the past life, we clear it. We hard reset for you.
Right. Okay. So, it's like declare bankrupt spiritually.
Declare bankrupt spiritually. Come back again. Do your rebirth. It's a very Chinese thing. Do your rebirth.
Ah, and then change name.
Change name, change luck, everything.
Okay. I have friends who have done that and who confuse me because like, and now you are what? Yeah. What?
So they have to do a spiritual burial. They have to actually have a coffin, a funeral, putting parts of their belongings into that.
Spiritually, he's been doing that for a long time.
Correct. So spiritually bankrupt that.
Right. Understood. Okay, I do have another question, which is, so she's got this whole string of rejected lovers, right? Or rather, drained lovers, ex-lovers, right? And they all hate her. But what kind of protection does she have that none of them have been able to harm her or take revenge, right? So apart from being a luck vampire, she must have some pretty serious protection. Because she's got enemies.
In order for her to do this, right? She herself not a practitioner. I don't think so lah. Doesn't sound like she's a practitioner. She has someone that she goes to who does this for. So that one probably high level. Or that could actually be the real husband. Or maybe she's draining all this luck for him.
So maybe she's collecting for her boss. Yes, quite possibly. Quite possibly. The luck monster.
Right, so I mean, if I'm a practitioner, I'm helping you get all the luck at what? At your little miserable ampao every few months, is it? No, I mean, if this is going to be a long-term partnership, hey, I want a percentage.
Yeah, true. Absolutely true. Yeah, so she's draining luck for something much more much more high-powered. And what are they doing with that luck? Goodness knows.
So that guy, whoever he is, has all the justification to protect her. She's his cash cow.
Correct. That's very true. But I mean, for the Chinese, right, luck is something much more profound than just good things happening to you getting rich. You know, it is also tied to your spirit, your life force, right? You know, that's why, you know, when you kena from spirits, you become more yin, right? The ghost touch you. Your luck is also drained. Correct. It is connected to your spirit. Correct. So the draining of your luck doesn't mean you're still healthy and happy. No, it's all connected, right? So we call it luck here because this is how the story begins, but what he may be collecting life actually force. Is a kind of life force. Yeah. A life force, a spiritual sort of essence, right? And I think if they keep draining you longer and longer, you will become a shriveled, you know, some way of a person.
If he got children, actually the lineage is also affected. Because ancestral luck will pass down from generation to generation. So if you become the bottleneck, your entire generation under you is just royal.
I mean, you hear about this also from from the very oldest Chinese tales from like Liao Zai and all that, you know, right? Where you know, if you are in association with the spirit, right? You know, they drain that life force. And one of the symptoms of that draining, apart from, you know, turning pale and being sickly and all that, is also the fact that your fortune takes a turn, for sure, right? You will never win at anything, you know, because... So I do think that there is... in this story, still not so bad. Mm. Nothing really dark has happened to him. But yes, a little bit, one more year, and who knows? Who knows, right? Yeah, so this one got potentially bad story. So
hopefully this one got part two after we settle this.
I want to hear the part two. But I mean, to Cheng, please take care. Okay? We are all behind you. Okay? And keep us informed, okay?
Black magic or is it not magic? So according to the poll, 70% of you felt that this has got something to do with magic. 30% of you felt it was just her being cray cray. Some of you felt it was both. It's a crazy person using black magic. Some of the interesting answers that I got from you guys was that sperm is a man's life force. So her collecting his sperm is collecting his life force. And she's able to use that for a lot of different nefarious means. Now, with regards to coming up with a solution into how to handle this, one of you said one of the ways to do it is to get more merits, do more good things. But now don't forget, if the pipeline is really moving to her, you doing more merits isn't going to come to you. It's going to go to her. Remember the analogy I used about the river moving towards her because there's a dam here? So you putting in more merits here is not going to go to you. It's still going to go to her. It's going to make her luckier. One of you also suggested perhaps she could or he could hide out in a monastery for some number of years. And hopefully that might just sort of reset the river for him. That could work because if you go to a monastery, apparently you are this whole bubble of protection. That may work. That may work. The other one also suggested use a hantu raya. Now, for those of you who don't know what a hantu raya is a Malay style where you create a doppelganger of yourself, and a hantu raya is able to take on your likeness and be you. So in this case, I guess what you're trying to do is use the hantu raya as a defense mechanism. But if you look at it from an energy and signature standpoint, your energy, which is your IP, your unique IP, like an internet protocol, will still point you out to be the one and not the hantu raya. So the hantu raya at best is just a VPN. But if she's able to go to source, which means she has your sperm, your hair, your nails, hantu raya may not help. And the solution I suggested, where it talks about killing yourself spiritually, this is actually done more commonly than you expect, especially in Taiwan. And for a lot of powerful people, they do that. Again, hearsay, there's an important person in Singapore who actually have had his own spiritual death. Also another powerful person in Malaysia may have done the same. And one of these signs that a person has done something like this sort of ritual is the fact that they don't get sick easily or at all, and they tend to live to beyond a ripe old age. So there will be a part two to this, Carlos Cole. Unfortunately, I don't have the part two now because it's an ongoing case, so I can't help it. No, Sean Cheng, I am helping Cheng. That's how I got this story, because Cheng came to me and I matched him with one of my contacts that I know, and we are actually doing this ritual for him. It turns out after the ritual, after he's done the ritual, a few days later, the spell got into effect again, which means it's not just enough to do a cleansing, it's not just enough to do a manifestation of bond cutting, because the raw material is with Amy and she can use it anytime she wants to recreate a connection again. Hanjay asked, would she know he tried to break the bond? Yes, she would. She would know. Or like what John and I think, that she actually has a boss, someone that she's reporting to. That guy would know as well. Maybe Stay says, maybe she finds a new target that she may forget the old. That's very true. But I'm also thinking, Mavis, that if she's already having all this connection to all these ex-boyfriends and ex-husband, including Cheng, I don't think she's letting them off. It's not taking a new one and forgetting the old. She's just collecting more and more of these guys. More guys, more luck. Before we go on to our next confession, just a bit of message from me. Supernatural Confessions was created as a safe space for people to share their paranormal encounters. If you or someone you know has a strange encounter to share, we want to hear about it. You can type it to us, send us a voice memo, or even meet me for a face-to-face interview. Visit supernaturalconfessions.com for more info. On to our final confession for tonight.
Eugene, I saw your video on Supernatural Confessions about praying for 4D numbers, and I have an experience to confess. I also went for something similar, but the ritual was quite different from the one in your video. The master chose a moonless night for this ritual, and we were asked to gather in one of the cemeteries after midnight and trekked to a grave site that was quite a distance from the main road. Each of us were given a stick, a piece of stick with inscriptions on it that we were supposed to stick into the grave. And then a red thread was tied to one end of the stick, and the other end of the thread led to the base of a joss stick that we held in our hands. Then the master will summon the spirits using bells and the chanting of mantras. Each of us stood at a grave of our choice. About 10 to 15 minutes later, we were given a metal bowl each with folded pieces of paper with numbers written on them. The idea was for us to shake the bowl and produce four numbers. These numbers would be our personal numbers to buy. After getting the four numbers, we were then instructed to put earth from the grave into the bowl and then stick the joystick into it. Next, each of us was required to make our individual promise to the spirit we were bargaining with on what we will offer in return if they help us with the windfall. The recommended payments were food offerings and paper hell notes. The regulars amongst us had told us while on the way down that dripping blood in the bowl would power up the ritual and make our wish come faster. I was hesitant about it, but since others were doing it, I just followed along. They've done this before me, so if they are all right, I should be all right too. The ritual concluded, and then we were all dismissed. The final instructions given were, go home directly, do not talk to anybody, do not detour. I asked if we could shower, and fortunately, that was allowed. That very night, some of us had dreams. They were all quite different. Some said they dreamt of ghosts. Some saw visions of future events. And some had no dreams at all. For me, at first I dreamt of an elderly man dressed in olden days clothing. He looked angry and in pain, and he was coughing into a handkerchief. He appeared to be showing me something, but I couldn't see what. And then the scene transformed to a version of my room, but larger. And in it, there was a black shadow-like figure floating on my ceiling right above my bed. I don't recall seeing any features, just a very black human-shaped creature. It moved around the room. I bought mine straight, so I didn't win any that week. The following week, I tried again, but also didn't win. The third week, I won consolation prize. The total amount I won was way lesser than what I had spent on the ritual and on buying lottery tickets for 3 weeks straight. I wasn't that happy, but what can I do? The master did keep his word. My number did come out. There just wasn't enough to do anything with it. That night and the following nights, I started having recurring dreams. Each dream was a bit different. None of them seemed to make any sense. Not as if there was a message or anything. I checked in with the group chat and some said they had a similar experience, but after they repaid the offering, the dream stopped. So the next morning, I went downstairs to buy some joss paper and went to the bin to burn. Initially, I had offered a live chicken, but since my windfall was small, I decided that joss paper is more than generous. That night, the black shadowy figure came back into my dreams and strangled me. I struggled to wake, kicking and clawing at the figure. When I finally woke up, I found my fingernails bleeding. I had been scratching at the wooden head of the bed. The skin on my feet was raw from abrasion from rubbing against the bed sheets. I didn't notice it at first until I went to work and my colleague asked about the bruise around my neck. That night I went home, I had a high fever. I did the usual and went to the doctors to get medicine and MC. But after a week, fever still persisted. My cough had blood and phlegm in it. I texted the master personally and asked if I could see him. At first, he was hesitant, but after a lot of pleading, he finally relented. The first thing he asked was, pay back debt already or not? I said, paid. He looked at me suspiciously. You think I first time do this, ah? He said. I told him about my financial situation and that the windfall wasn't big enough to afford. I sat through a half hour of nagging that afternoon. Basically, a debt is a debt, no matter what my windfall is. I need to pay what is owed. It was either the chicken's life or mine. The ritual that the master was going to conduct to help me appease the spirit was going to cost me money as well. In the end, this shortcut to getting a quick windfall cost me even more overall. It just wasn't worth it.
You know, one thing I've never contemplated at all. We always talk about praying to the gods or praying to the devil for windfall, it always, in my mind, a windfall, a lot of money. This guy won. He won consolation prize, but not enough to even pay back everything.
How much is a consolation prize? I'm not a 4D person. Consolation prize is like what?
Could be is 50, 150, at least? What? 300. But considering that he buy the first time, paid for ritual, next month, he next week, he permutation, then it's nothing. It's still very boy. So we're going to buy the joss paper and burn, like, you know. This is more than generous.
Okay. So my question then is it because he picked a weak grave, right? The spirit that he chose did not have that kind of power to give a good number, right? I mean, you think about it, right? If so many people are there, one grave each, some people are getting better spirits than others, right? You know, either that or is there some what was the variation in it? Was it in the quality of the spirit, or was it in him? You know, his wish not sincere enough. Is it got such thing on? You know, what is it that made him? Yeah, I mean, other people were striking first time, right? There must be people who struck better, right?
No, now you mention it. Like every grave you go, it's like tikam tikam, right? Like I choose you.
Correct, right? I mean, isn't that the point of, I guess, asking the whole group to choose one grave each, right? Some of them will get the powerful grave, right? Some of them will get the powderless grave, lah. You know, or maybe like freshly, not say freshly dead, but you know, more recently dead, so don't have so much clout, you know, or don't have so much pull. I mean, that to me sounds like the point of this. Mm. It is a tikam tikam, you know. Maybe the best graves are the master keep for himself.
I think
you know?
He knows. He gets all the VIP lot.
Correct. True. Right. This one is sort of like not even orientation. It's just a beginner level.
Yeah.
You know. So let you win 50, 100 lah. You know, mini windfall. Mm. So in that case, I mean, a chicken is not a lot lah. No. It's a small offering to give. It is a small offering to give, right? And would you say, compared to the last two stories, right, where we're talking about a big debt, right, you know, would you say that then if he had paid off the chicken, then he's okay lah? This is a confession that will not have dragged him to hell. You know, that it doesn't get any worse, right? Because this minor spirit just wanted the chicken. You know,
so I think this is more like a cautionary tale as well, right?
Ah,
so just because you think it's not worth a chicken, and like you say, John, chicken is not worth a lot.
Yeah,
but a debt is a debt. A promise is a promise.
Correct.
And things could have gotten far worse, you know. And I think that, you know, this story hasn't even ended yet. Like, I just got this quite fresh because as I was. How I choose my topic for confessions is like whatever that comes in. Sometimes I find this exciting. I want to talk about it. So I start looking for other confessions to put into this particular topic.
They're really good.
Yeah. Mm. And so this one came in quite fresh. So today's confession, other than the first one, everything is still pretty much ongoing.
So the question then that is yet to be solved is whether or not the ritual is going to work, right? Yeah. But if the spirit say no, I demand my chicken, I don't care about what your ritual is, I will not let you off this debt.
I've got a few other concerns about this ritual and about this master. Okay. I don't know this master personally. I don't want to know either because plausible deniability. But if he's running this, and the question I have in my head always is, if you know where to get your windfall, why would you want to share it with anyone else and conduct a mass group unless the people that you are bringing are the shield for you? So just imagine if you're going for a back alley investment plan and you're this guy coming in last and people tell you, hey, don't worry, easy money. People before you have done it. You might be the scapegoat.
Okay, yes, I think that's entirely possible. I'm thinking of it as a more practical thing. He's just using these people to do market research, right? He alone cannot go and tackle so many graves. He cannot offer so many chickens at one time, right? And you have a graveyard of like, you know, 10,000 graves. It's like, I want to find the one super windfall. I'm going to do it 15 at a time or 20
wow.
at a
so
time.
So you pay me money to bring you into this circle. I put 15 of you around this plot. You all go to choke.
Yeah.
Then I look at my group chat and see who's successful, who not successful. Then I go,
And if don't have, I cancel off my map and I don't move
wow,
on.
Wow, hey John, that's a good business
right.
proposal right there.
Yeah, it's just market research, right? It's just market research, you know? So he probably has a list of growing ones, knowing, you know, and which graves are worth how much, right? And there's no risk of these 15 people coming back on their own because they cannot do the mantra,
yeah.
right? You can just tie a string for nothing. It will not work. Mm. So you still hold the code, right? You have the key to unlock it, and you now just need bodies to test for you.
I find that this, with my knowledge of cemetery rituals like this, what this master is doing is a very harsh form of magic where you pin the bamboo or the wooden stick into the grave,
the stick, yeah,
and that actually torments the spirit inside.
Yeah.
And the spirit is then forced to negotiate and do your bidding to get a release.
Correct. I mean, I this might be a digression, but it's also an interesting cross-cultural thing, right? Because the other sort of very prominent red thread summoning that I've always known of since I was a kid was when you tie a red thread to a banana tree, right? And then you force the spirit to communicate with you against its will, right? Holding a red thread is like twisting someone's arm behind their back. They have no choice. They have to respond. And then I'm sure they're kicking and, you know, cursing you. And then you turn your back, you die. You know? So I think in both the Malay culture and in the Chinese culture, this red thread thing is something they have in common. I'm curious to know who started it or whether it has even older origins, right? The idea of red thread, you know? But yeah, I think there's a risk involved, right? He is being a bit brutal to each of these spirits. So even smarter of him to have 15 guinea pigs, 15 fall guys, in case any of them is super angry, that spirit, it's not him who's dealing with the shit, right? Yeah, but if everything goes well, he's just able to eliminate a whole bunch of $10 graves, $100 graves, you know, and see who's got the spirit. Because I think, I'm assuming also that the quality of the spirit in terms of 4D giving relates a lot to what that spirit was before the person died. Right, if you had no luck, like one of the ex lovers from the last story, then your grave is a $10 grave, you know. But if you were that a maze grave, my goodness, the 40 numbers you can give, you know. So here's the other thought: how do you think that, you know, these masters even found out which are the graves? Right, it must have been a process like this. What
I didn't think about it, John, but yeah, right. Now that you mentioned it.
Oh, wait a minute. So someone who went to the graveyard recently and also did a ritual, were you just being someone's guinea pig?
No. I never buy number. I never take part. I just video only.
Worse, you are the lousy guinea pig, but you then still got no result. Wow. You are the kind, I give you the survey form, then you write nonsense.
Pay the price, but no, never win anything. But the other thing that I have in my mind is that shadowy figure, they also appeared in other people's dream. That doesn't sound to me like the ghost of the grave. That sounds like something else.
Oh.
So are we dealing with two spirits now? Multiple spirits? Or
I think to me could be really just the, you, I mean we know that if it's a soul or a spirit that you have no relationship with, the chances of you seeing any sort of clear detail are very low. Right? So yeah, to a bunch of strangers, all they're going to see is a shape, general shape. Lucky you can even see human shape. You see a blob, you know, right? It would take a relatively strong spirit to be able to project enough of its identity for you to see an old lady or a little child or whatever, right? You know, yeah, I think. But I do feel that it is a relatively old graveyard. The spirit's own life force has already been decayed to the point that they are just a shit. Right? If you see a freshly dead spirit, I think it retains a little bit of what identifying features. Right? But after decades or whatever, right? All that's left for you to see is like that.
So this one, the part where stood out for me is he says that last advice or last instruction is don't go Where's the line? I'm just trying to see.
Oh, don't talk to it. Don't talk to anyone.
Where's the line?
Is it the last instruction before they leave,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Don't talk to anyone. Go home.
Go home directly. Do not talk to anyone. Do not detour. So now I'm thinking, is this the counter? Like you want to go home directly. You don't want to talk to anyone. You don't want to detour because you want the spirit to follow you back and be able to
correct.
Give you that blessing.
Correct.
Which then also give credence to, if you don't want them to follow you back, you should correct. Go to 7-Eleven, detour, yes. to something else.
Yes, right. Do what I always do, right? After Changi, go 7-Eleven, right? Pass the spirit to the poor guy who's working overtime.
You know, go and talk to him. Talk as much as you can. Hey, how are you doing? Yeah.
Ask him to tell you sad stories of his life so his yin is even stronger than the spirit attached himself to him. Okay, no lah. But I mean, yes, I think that advice verifies the fact that, you know, what we always advise you to do in terms of shaking off anything that's following you, this is the exact opposite. Mm. Don't shake it off, right? Yeah. To the bus driver, suddenly your luck go to the bus driver. Right? So I think that's, you're right. It's like you have to carry the spirit home carefully in your hands. Don't run away. You know? I find it, now that you mentioned this, then suddenly this whole story is a little spookier because I had the impression that after you made the promise, it sort of closes the transaction there, and then maybe they'll come to you in your dreams for further updates. But now it seems like no, they're already with you, right? They just come to you in your dreams because probably that's an easier way for them to manifest. Mm. It takes a lot of power to just pop up in front of your face. Yeah. So they wait for your dreams, right? To reach you. But actually, they are with you already.
Yeah.
That's creepy. That's creepy AF, okay? That everyone left that graveyard with something following them. Oh shit.
Wow, interesting. Now I'm curious if you can find this master.
Wait for the WhatsApp group.
Yeah. Infiltrate it.
Actually, they had a WhatsApp group. Come on, that's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
Right? They had a WhatsApp group. It's insane. Mm. My goodness. Okay.
Good business model, man, this one. So what did we learn from today's topic of fortune favors? On Supernatural Confessions, I generally think that our audience here do not want to dabble with that. And you guys are a lot wiser than these people. I think money is important, but how we get it and the price to pay is sometimes not worth it. Or in the case of Cheng, he's just super sway lah. Met the wrong woman, thought that was a woman of his life, woman of his dream, only to have that totally go back on its head. So my advice to everyone as we close for tonight before we go to our featured confession is that sometimes you can take shortcut in life. But you know what would be better? Hard work. We don't have to worry about all these other things coming to bite you in the ass. Nothing beats hard work. Now before we say goodnight, I have a closing message from Jonathan.
Listening to these stories, right, it's very clear that, you know, it's a very normal thing to want a better chance, a better fortune, better luck, right? A better deal, right? It's very hard to avoid that temptation. But because it is so common and human, this desire, it is very easy for people to exploit it, right? For people to use that desire, to use that comfort and the enjoyment of luxury to trap you, right? Whether it is to use you to test their system, whether it's to, you know, suck your good fortune, suck your luck, you know. I mean, there's always a deal on top of the deal that you think you're trying to make, right? There's always another party. There's always a pimp, right? So I would say with these things, do not mess around with them because you do not know how many people are bleeding you dry.
Well, that's it for this episode of Friday Night Live, Fortune Favors. Next Friday, same time, same place, 10 p.m., Supernatural Confessions, YouTube. Don't be watching Netflix, Avatar, and stuff like that. Straight, 10 p.m., right here, Supernatural Confessions YouTube channel. Next week, we'll be talking about mistaken identity. Gods, who you thought were gods, not gods. Well, for tonight's episode, my name is Eugene Tay, Prince of Paranormal, and I'll see you guys at the featured confession. Good night, everybody.
What did you find?
Supernatural Confessions.
Money, money, money must be funny in the rich man's world. Money, 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 always sunny in the rich man's world. All the things I could do if I had a little money. It's a rich man's world.